Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. No one has a natural immunity to the COVID-19 virus, but some among us are better equipped than others to weather the disease. We're talking about what is known about the immune system that explains the difference. New York Times reporter Matt Richtel is a Pulitzer Prize-winning author. His 2019 book is titled An Elegant Defense, The Extraordinary New Science of the Immune System, A Tale in Four Lives. The book has been released in paperback. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Hi, Ann. How are you?
I'm pretty good. If I sound muffled, it's because I'm wearing a mask. So,
wait, you're wearing a mask right now?
Yeah.
You know that what I have is not communicable over the radio.
I'm trying to, show support for people out there and, be with them. But yes, I know it's not communicable. That would be the genius. So
yeah, no, I mean, it also presupposes I do have some things, and I can't go into my own medical history here on the radio. But
no,
let's just say you'd be less safe in person.
Well, I guess one of the things about this day and age that we're in right now is the lexicon is changing. And when this first emerged in, well, as we now know, probably in November, but to the rest of us little people in January, it was referred to as a novel coronavirus, which is scientific lexicon for it's a new one, which means what when it comes to our immune systems?
Yeah. That word novel is the one that probably I will remember for the ages. What I think we thought it meant, and it also does mean, is that this is a genetic variation, probably part animal, part human virus, that has found a niche inside of us. But it's really hard not to see that word novel as meaning new to our immune systems. And that is in many ways why we find ourselves exactly in the position that we're in.
And so what happens when the immune system encounters something new? It doesn't happen very often, right?
Yeah, it doesn't happen very often, partly because over time, we've seen a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've had this conversation, I think, in bits and pieces, Anne, but if you look around you, on every surface are you in your home office? Where are you?
I'm actually in my studio still.
Oh, you're in your studio. Hence the mask.
Well, yeah, because different people.
Or solidarity, basically.
Yeah, exactly, solidarity.
Okay, so for everybody listening, out there, wherever you're listening, presumably more at home than ever, all around you are microbes. On your desk, on your smartphone, on your countertops, there's bacteria, virus, and parasite. Most of them wouldn't harm us, partly because we've gotten used to most of them. We are covered in a thin veneer of stuff, and it's even in our gut. So we're accustomed to most of the stuff we see. Occasionally along comes something new. Just a quick pause, and I think it's fair to argue, I don't know that this is a certitude, but it's fair to argue we'll see more stuff like this, and that has to do with population density. There's more of us around to pass stuff around, and we also live closer to animals and live animal markets. So, okay, off the aside, back to the thing.
Uh-huh.
We see a novel thing. So it takes time for our immune system to get up and running when it confronts something new. Have you heard of antibodies?
Yes.
Tell me, let me put you on the spot. What's your understanding of that?
I feel like antibodies are the troops that are trained to fight something,
yeah,
but they can't be trained until they're exposed to something.
It's So how come you didn't write the book?
Well, you know. I have no vision.
Where were you when I didn't know what I was talking about?
What did you... So am I right?
Yeah, you're right. So inside our bodies, there are actually two sets of immune systems, believe it or not. There's a first set of first responders. These are not your antibodies. So, and if you get pricked by a stick, you get a bunch of immune cells coming to the scene that are like police and fire. And by the way, can I just briefly say thanks to our first responders?
Yes.
Thank you, first responders. So I learned this in the book. It kind of blew me away. You have two immune systems. But these folks are generic. They can't really do away with the disease. They can kind of hold it in check until this antibody system gets up and running inside your body, Anne, owing to a magnificent system that's been around 500 million years. There are a handful, and I mean really a handful, of trained assassins to fight almost any disease. But the thing is, when you face a novel disease, those handful have to start replicating. They have to start, think of a factory. A new factory has to get up and running to fight this thing. If we've seen a coronavirus before, a different version, if we've seen some other kind of flu, we already have a head start, and our antibody factories can get up and running more quickly. That's the problem with a novel disease. It takes time, and you can see the devastation that follows.
But it's a coronavirus, and so isn't there some kind of foothold that the system has in that it's a new coronavirus, but it's still a coronavirus?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I was just reading the science on that last night.
Thank God.
Wait, or were you reading the science?
No.
How about this? I asked the questions.
Okay. No, really, seriously, go on.
So look, within these taxonomies of organisms, within these groups, there's enough of a genetic variation that actually we will not recognize it. And the reason, what I was reading last night, and this is relevant, is when we do recognize it, we begin to build up immunity as individuals and what's called herd immunity as a group. Let me set that aside and we can come back to it. It's going to be very significant as we move forward to the question of reopening. But there's just enough difference here that if we haven't seen this particular strain, our antibodies may not be up and running. And can I just pause and take a big step back for a second? So we are getting close to the molecular weeds here, but I just would make this observation. So I spent about 3 years learning about the immune system and a big chunk of it talking to Dr. Fauci, who I guess now we call the Dr. Fauci. CMDA, Chief Medical Badass of the right. United States. Can I say that?
You did.
I guess I just did.
Yeah.
But I think it's very fair to say, as we talked briefly about before we got on the air, that the coronavirus story is an immune system story at its core. And the reason for that is we are trying to both play catch-up with our immune systems to this novel coronavirus, but in some cases we're also trying to not have our immune systems overreact. And that is why you sometimes hear people are in the ICU dying of an excessive immune response. I'll set that aside, but I just want to say at its core, this is an immune system story. This is the collective immune system versus the novel coronavirus.
Okay.
Hey, look, I try to underwhelm the host periodically. And if I've done that now, then I've checked my box off early on in the interview, Ann.
Okay, you know, there's an excessive immune system response when they say that people are dying in the hospital. Some people are, not everybody.
Yeah. So, go.
So, what is, so is the immune, you know, so I have psoriasis. I've told people that before. So I know that sometimes your immune system can backfire. That's what's happening.
Not just sometimes. It turns out that the immune system is constantly striving for balance. There's a super fancy word people like Fauci use called homeostasis. And they are the immune system wants to stay in balance. It wants to have exactly the right response to exactly the right disease. So you've got psoriasis. Do you mind explaining to people what that is?
Well, from what I've learned over the years, it usually crops up. It's a skin disease. Crops up in post-adolescence, and it is the body's, the skin cells are reproducing at many hundreds of times the normal rate, which manifests in patchy, dry scare areas on your skin or worse.
And that is considered an autoimmune disorder, is that right?
Right.
So that is prompted, that's caused by the immune system behaving as if there was some kind of bacteria or virus inside of you, even though there's not, and then causing inflammation. Am I getting that generally right?
Exactly.
Okay. So here's the thing about the immune system, and this is going to lead us right back to COVID-19 and what we're trying to accomplish as a society with antiviral vaccines, antiviral medications, vaccines, and then why we're using all these ventilators. This has to do with this very subject. The immune system is trying to stay balanced. So let's say it comes across a virus of any kind or a bacteria of any kind. Ideally, it would produce just enough of a defense response to kill this thing without doing any collateral damage. When you get a cold, when you get the flu, before we ever get to this disease, what happens is... Excuse me, that's just a regular cough, not transmissible over the phone. But, you know, wear the mask anyway. Yeah. So when that happens, you feel fatigue. You may get a fever. You may get aches and pains. That is actually caused by the immune. That is a feeling from the inflammation from your defense attacking. If you want to think of this as in a war metaphor, which I don't particularly like, but just for a moment, if you were to go to war, you would want the most surgical strike possible on the enemy. If you had bombs that went elsewhere, they would begin to harm civilians. If you have too big of an immune response, it harms the tissue outside of the virus. So, what does that have to do with the novel coronavirus? Well, one of the things that we're finding is that in the lungs, there can be a particularly there's a greater possibility with lungs that the immune system will overreact. The lungs are very delicate, and the immune system gets a little bit panicky at times. It goes, uh-oh, these lungs are damaged. These lungs can't get enough air in. I better send a bunch of troops. Now, this is not happening all the time, Anne, but it is happening. And when it happens, believe it or not, you can die in the ICU from having an excessive immune response, not an insufficient immune response. And that's one of the very tricky medical issues that our frontline providers are dealing with right now.
We are talking about the immune system. My guest is Matt Richtel. He's a New York Times reporter and author of the 2019 book, An Elegant Defense, The Extraordinary New Science of the Immune System, A Tale in Four Lives. It is now out in paperback. If you have a question or comment for Matt, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. No one necessarily has a natural immunity to COVID-19, but some among us are better equipped than others to weather the disease. We're talking about what is known about the immune system that explains the differences. Still with us is New York Times reporter, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, and author Matt Richtel. His 2019 book is titled An Elegant Defense, The Extraordinary New Science of the Immune System, A Tale in Four Lives. The book has now been released in paperback. Matt, thanks again for joining us.
Morning, Ann, again.
All right, so where we left off was the overreaction of the immune system and what the damage is and how that can, in other words, it's the ultimate backfire of the system. So is that because the individuals have otherwise compromised their immune system?
Yeah, the short answer here is we don't know. This will be unsatisfying in many ways. There's a lot we don't understand right now about why the body's reacting the way it is, but I can offer you some educated guesses. One is that it may be overreacting in the lungs or insufficiently reacting. Again, it can be both, mm-hmm. because people, as they age, lose lung capacity. And so you may either need a more vibrant defense in the lungs, or you need that when the body begins to defend those precious lungs, it sort of panics and overreacts and floods the lungs and the lung tissue with these immune cells that then can drown the lungs. Can I say something about the lungs? It's also a part of this story. I'm not sure how much I've been out about how central the idea of the lungs themselves are in this conversation.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, I struggled to learn this, and I know you're wearing a mask, Ann, but to the extent you can take a deep breath, will you do that? All right. So, for everybody listening, that is something we unconsciously do all the time, and we sure had better, or we'd all keel over. There'd be no oxygen to our organs, and in particular, our brains. And that makes our lungs the most exposed organ in our body. It has to be. We have made an incredible trade-off biologically to get oxygen through these tiny little air sacs that line our lungs into our brain and our organs. And that happens automatically. Well, that puts the immune system in a really tough position. Think about it. The immune system has to allow this exchange or we die. But if something gums up the works in there, we're also in big trouble. So remember I said that the immune system's constantly trying to calibrate?
Mm-hmm.
You can imagine how easily it could get off balance in this most delicate area, where it wants to allow constant air exchange while also being vigilant for any intruders. So oftentimes when people die in the ICU of a lung infection. And here I'm preceding COVID-19 or the novel coronavirus, the flu, pneumonia. If you look at the statistics of people who die in the ICU, they will often die of an excessive immune response, in that the immune response is trying to figure out what to do in this very delicate area. I found this quote, Anne, this morning. So again, we know him as the Dr. Fauci. I just knew him as Dr. Fauci when I spent a year talking to him. But I asked him toward the end of the book, I said, you know, there's all this stuff that says we should try to boost our immune system. Should we? And this is what he said to me. He said, it almost makes me chuckle. First of all, it is assuming your immune system needs boosting, which it very likely doesn't. And he says, if you do successfully boost your immune system, it might do something bad. And that was a couple of years ago he said that. So how prescient.
In other words, it could easily, the question is whether it's people who have been boosting their immune systems, as well as maybe people who have weakened immune systems that are struggling with this the most. It's possible.
Yeah, possible. I just also want to say, I think what he was getting at there is, you know, these products that tell you, like, you know, wipe some avocado toast on your head and you'll boost your immune system.
Yeah.
Well, that's also the only, and that's now the only part of your face exposed is your forehead. But the excuse me again. When you laugh, I cough. I can't figure it out. All these products very likely don't work. It's bad marketing in that it's misinformed about what our bodies want. So even if we move away from the novel coronavirus, you don't want an excessive immune response, because that is the feeling of inflammation, the fatigue, even the psoriasis, that anybody who's got an autoimmune disorder knows what a boosted immune response is. So when you see that marketing, you know, in the infomercial or at the herbal remedy store that says boost your immune system, that's not what you want. But even if you but even if you did want it, what Fauci was getting at is, I'm not sure it would work anyway. We don't have a lot of proof that these products work.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is the author of the 2019 book, An Elegant Defense, The Extraordinary New Science of the Immune System, A Tale in Four Lives. The book is now out in paperback. If you have a question for Matt Richtel, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And John in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, John.
Hello.
Go ahead.
My name is John Pettibone, Columbus resident. It has occurred to me that it might be useful to look at this virus situation from the point of view, not of we as individuals, but as the Earth, Gaia, as its own independent and interdependent living organism, and that the coronavirus epidemic is an attempt on the part of the immune system of the Earth itself to deal with human beings' overpopulation, which is a disease on the face of the Earth.
That's been dealt with in science fiction before, Matt Richtel. Is there any evidence that this is kind of, you know, part of a whole larger living thing?
I mean, John, that's actually a really, really good question. I'm gonna give it a very serious answer, but I do want to offer John a caveat that I learned from talking to all these scientists. They always would tell me, don't give motive to things without brains. I appreciate the reference to Gaia, but they would say, like, the immune system doesn't have a motive, if you will, or a you can't anthropomorphize it or give it that kind of thing. But that said, John, there's interesting evidence in a variety of places that when you get density or overpopulation, that there are unseen forces that seek to provide balance again. And one of them can be, let's just take the simple notion of wildfires. You get a high density of trees and heat, and wildfires burn out the environment and restore a certain kind of balance to a living, to an ecosystem that has found a very stable way to survive. Similarly, I please don't quote me on this, John, and I'm glad I'm not on the air right now, so no one will hear me say this. but I believe sperm counts are down, and I've wondered if that is partly a kind of unconscious way of trying to keep population density down. There is a large ecosystem I don't think we fully grasp. And John, your question is a good one. Might the fact that we are living in close confines and with animals be triggering effects to restore balance? But again, not a conscious act on the part of Gaia, more a large evolutionary ecosystem seeking balance.
John, thanks for that question. You know what I was thinking about earlier when we were talking, and it kind of goes to like this history of the study of the immune system, was the 1898 book War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells. I mean, the idea that something like this could happen, I guess the War of the Worlds feels like almost a metaphor now for the war of all these germs flying around and what, you know, what will prevail in the end. In that case, of course, the germs on the earth killed the alien invaders. But H.G. Wells was onto that, right?
Yeah, I mean, you got to hand it to science fiction writers. If it's going to happen, somebody already wrote about it. So. They're good. But I do want to say one thing about I want to make one observation about the immune system, because it is so marvelous. And I don't suspect that a germ will undo us all. Can I tell you about a guy named a medical marvel, actually studied by Tony Fauci, who kind of helps underscore why we're so resilient?
Yeah.
There's a guy in my book by the name of Bob Hoff, and he got HIV the night of Halloween 1977 and never had a symptom. And it was not long after that Fauci and these other incredible researchers, at the National Institutes of Health came across him, and his immune system is a source of study at the National Institutes of Health. He, among a handful of others who are known as elite controllers, what that means is that their bodies control the immune system, the HIV virus, in a way most of us do not. Now, why is that so relevant to this? It's really significant to note that there's an enormous diversity in our collective immune system. And you may be able to survive some things that I won't, and I may be able to survive some things that you won't. But if you think about a planet filled with all of the diverse immune systems, some of us are going to survive any given plague. I know it's a grotesque way to think of it, but it does put into some context why we're not likely to be wiped out collectively.
Completely. Right. Let's see. Karen in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I understand it's too early to get any studies on the COVID-19 virus, but I was wondering if there's been any studies done on people with, you know, the seasonal allergies, who I guess is the immune response that's overreacting, and people that have problems getting this virus in their, or any virus in their lungs. If there's been any studies on that.
Karen, are you still there?
Yes, she is.
Karen, can you just elaborate? When you say studies on that, are you referring to with regard to COVID or what? How viruses attack the lungs? Can you just elaborate a little bit?
Sure. I'm guessing it's too early to get any information on COVID. If there is information on a correlation between allergies and COVID, I'd like to know that.
I see. Yeah. Karen, I'm not sure we know yet. The challenge with a lot of the research right now is different pockets of researchers are seeing different isolated pieces of information. And it's very tempting in some cases to draw conclusions. I'll give you an example. Out of France, there was an observation that NSAIDs, which is an anti-inflammatory, I think we tend to know as ibuprofen or Advil, might make the COVID worse. I'm not repeating that here because it's true. I don't think anybody knows that it's true, and it's probably been determined not true at this point. But my larger point is that you start to see these small pieces of information extrapolated into very big pieces of information. I think one of the interesting things you've heard Fauci and others say right now is X and Y looks promising in this group of people. Real drug development and real conclusions about what works and what doesn't, or Karen, in your case, whether there's a connection between allergies, takes unfortunately a lot of time. One more quick aside that is, if you're looking for cup half full things, I might be a rotten journalist because my skepticism is insufficiently high, but so I'm going to give you a reason for optimism. What we are seeing right now on the scientific front is no less than awesome. And if you think you can think of the forefront of our immune systems as being the human mind, we are putting together some solutions very quickly through cooperation and high technology that may get us out of this pickle much more quickly than we otherwise might have been. So, you know, I've said thanks to the first responders, thanks to the frontline providers, and a big thanks to the scientists right now.
Thank you, Karen. My guest is Matt Richtel, New York Times reporter, author of the 2019 book, An Elegant Defense, The Extraordinary New Science of the Immune System, A Tale in Four Lives. We just heard about one of those lives, Bob. If you have a question or comment for Matt, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We are talking about the immune system today. Some of us are better equipped than others to weather the disease of COVID-19. We're talking about what is known about the immune system that explains the difference. Still with us, New York Times reporter and author Matt Richtel. His 2019 book is titled An Elegant Defense, The Extraordinary New Science of the Immune System, A Tale in Four Lives. The book has been released in paperback now. If you have a question or comment for Matt Richtel, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Matt, you were inspired to write about the immune system by the story of a lifelong friend of yours named Jason. You opened the book with him. Tell us about Jason and a little bit about what he went through and what the relationship, you know, what the story is about immunotherapies when it comes to someone like Jason.
Yeah. So I grew up in Colorado, and I had a friend named Jason, and he was just Mr. Everything. He was all-state baseball and all-state basketball, and he got all the girls, and you can tell I kind of looked up to him. He was among a group of friends that I hung out with and all the way through high school. And when we were in our 40s, he got cancer. He had a lymphoma, which is a blood cancer. And he wound up not, it's one of those cancers you're supposed to be able to survive with chemo and radiation, but he didn't. And come about 3 years into this, and this is just a couple of years ago, he had 15 pounds of cancer in his back, and it was doubling every few weeks. And his oncologist in Denver tearfully said to him, hey, Jason, I love you, man, but it's time to go home and die. And Jason went into hospice. So this is, you've heard of immunotherapy, your listeners surely have. It's a very cutting edge technology that sort of helps the immune system awaken to cancer. And Jason asked to take this. It's not on market yet. It's not approved for this cancer by the FDA. And Jason takes it, and just to be clear here, and nine toes in the grave, not 1 foot. He's all but done. And 2 weeks after he takes this, his girlfriend wakes him and says, "Jason, get out of bed. Your tumors have disappeared." So I hear this story. I'm his buddy. I'm a New York Times health and science reporter, and I just go, "What?" Jason, we all just flew to Colorado to have your goodbye party. I want my money back. No, I'm obviously very, very, very much kidding. It was thrilling, but I had to understand what had happened with the immune system and what it set off, and was a journey that became this book. But what it really became was an understanding that the immune system, for many years, a backwater of science, immunology was 2 pages in a med school textbook, has become arguably the central part of modern science, because we have learned at long last to tinker at a molecular level with this most crucial system. And we are beginning, and this goes right back to COVID, your psoriasis, Jason's rise from the grave. It has given us the ability to turn a little bit up or a little bit down the immune system, and thereby attack some of the most excruciating illnesses that we have. And that's what got me into the story.
Jeff in Grandview, you're on the air with Matt Richtel. Hi, Jeff.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Sure. Really great conversation today. I'll probably get my terminology mixed up. I've read a lot of articles, or a couple articles lately, about the importance of a healthy biome in your gut.
Yeah.
The little creatures in there.
Yep.
That's all. Is that a
oh, just
real thing?
Well, if you were just calling to see if you got your terminology right, you did. and what's our prize today? you get some yogurt.
I want a T-shirt.
Yeah, you get a T-shirt. But
hey, I want a T-shirt.
But you know, it seems like the human. I don't have T-shirts yet. But if I did, would you want one? So you talked about the backwater. I mean, I mentioned that H.G. Wells was talking about, you know, viruses in 1889 in the War of the Worlds. Another backwater has been the biome and the gut biome. They're connected.
Yes, hugely. And a really good question. So for the uninitiated or those wondering about what the biome or the microbiome is I mentioned that there are microbes all around us. There are also microbes inside of us, and they are in our gut, and they are vital to our digestion, which we have understood for a while, but we now also understand they are vital to the immune system. And some of the most powerful cutting-edge research, and I explore this in the book, has to do with the way these microbes are actually communicating across what we once thought was a sealed border between the gut and the rest of our body, and signaling the immune system to take certain actions, like attack or stop an attack. Now, why in the world would this ecosystem work this way? Well, think of it this way. Those bacteria in the gut, that microbiome, needs you to live. You are its host. So it has adapted and evolved over many years to be part of the immune system to keep us alive. Here's one of the challenges. We are only learning now the punchline of this story, which is what does it mean to have a healthy gut biome, and how do we get that? How do we facilitate that? I'm sorry I used the word facilitate. Can we start the interview over? That's a dime store word.
Bonk.
All right, beginning again. Yeah. My name is Matt Richtel. I have a cough. Anne's wearing a mask. So, look, there's a lot of promises here made about the microbiome, but in reality, it's very hard to tease apart what an individual molecule or food does in the microbiome. So for right now, I know I've name-dropped Fauci enough that people are getting sick to their stomachs, but I will tell you that I also asked him, what should we eat? And he said, we really, right now, what we know is you ought to have a balanced diet. Probably not too heavy on the red meat, but we can't name a specific food that's going to make your biome, really tune it up one way or the other.
Jeff, thanks for that call.
Great call.
I am going to go to Jane now. Jane, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, good morning. I'm calling because I heard the other day that hyperbaric form of oxygen is more effective in breaking down the molecules or the barrier in the lungs than just the regular oxygen that they're now administrating. Is there any truth to that?
Oh, my gosh. Tell me your name again.
Jane.
Jane, you've stumped me. You get my T-shirt. I don't know.
Okay.
And my mask. I actually don't know the answer. I will say in trying to not look totally foolish that what your question's a good one about how we are getting more and better degrees of oxygen into our lungs. And just this morning, I was reading that some of the conventional wisdom that we, if you can call what we knew a month ago conventional wisdom, is changing. For instance, there's talk of putting people on ventilators later, maybe using CPAP machines, which is what some people use for, son of a gun, Anne, help me out.
Yeah, the sleeping thing.
Sleep apnea.
Yeah, right.
But also, you've heard this talk, is it Jane?
Jane, yeah.
Jane, of people going prone, turning them over. Interestingly enough, this simple solution is being used more and more to try to get to drain the lungs and get oxygen in. But I do not know about hyperbolic, so I'm going to continue to own my not knowing.
Okay,
there.
That's cool. Jane, thank you so much. Steve in Worthington, you're on the air. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I have a question about, I understand pretty much how the immune system works and how it overworks sometimes and in some cases. What I have not been clear on, and nobody's made it clear to me so far, is what is the actual, what in the human body, is it the sympathetic nervous system, is it the brain, what is it that actually controls and releases the immune, the immune response? Is it controlled by the brain, sympathetic nervous system, or some other system that I don't know about? What is it that triggers all that and makes it happen once it recognizes the the foreign thing that it needs to? What's in control of?
Okay, Matt.
That's a wonderful question. So it's not the brain. It's not a conscious process. And I can tell you a little bit about the relationship to the sympathetic immune system, and there is one, the sympathetic response, but it doesn't control it either. What is happening is that the immune system is, in effect, in control of itself, if you want to think of it that way. And it is arguably the most pervasive system in the body. What do I mean by that? What I mean is, the immune system crosses barriers in the body that other systems do not cross. A pancreatic cell stays largely in the pancreas unless you get a cancer. A Same with your other organs. But the immune system roams widely. What triggers it was the word you used, I think. Anne, was that
yes.
the word
yep.
that was used? So you have these first responders I described, the innate immune system, and they you can think of them as like the way I describe it in the book is your body is a festival, and think of it like a giant cocktail party with all these different rooms filled with different cells and roaming them, sliding around in there, sniffing, literally sniffing. Well, not literally sniffing, but effectively sniffing, mm-hmm. are immune cells that are roaming this festival, this cocktail party, looking for evildoers, looking for things out of place. And to the caller's question, what triggers a response is when they see something that's out of place, they begin signaling like crazy. And the number of signals that the immune system can send are very myriad and very nuanced. They might be, check this out. They might be, check this out right now. They might be, hurry, we've got a fire. They might be, slow down, this thing's not a problem. But those are all being controlled by a set of signals that are so instant they make the internet look like AOL dial-up. And and that is what is in effect in control. And to the caller, and what was the caller's name? I'm sorry, I forgot.
Steve.
Steve. I would say Steve. Not to. This is going to sound like I'm overselling the book, but it's a complicated network, and it's much more deeply explained in the book. But it would be if we want to discuss it over coffee, it'll take about that long.
Okay. All right, Steve. Good question. Thank you for that. Turning to another Steve in Medina. Hi, Steve.
Hi. How are you?
Good. We're running out of time, but I wanted to squeeze you in.
I'll make this real quick. Matt, I have a rheumatoid arthritis, and I take Humira three times a month. Is there any evidence that this could be helping me with the immune response to this virus?
Steve, first of all, so you can speak eloquently to an excessive immune response. I hope you're doing okay. How is the Humira working? I'm curious.
Just great. I'm wearing my mask and gloves for about 2 months, but I haven't gotten nothing yet.
But your symptoms of your rheumatoid arthritis, how are they?
Manageable.
So I just want to say to the listeners, what you're hearing Steve describe, and then I'll answer your question, is really important. It's the flip side to the story of my friend Jason, where in his case, they tinkered with the immune system to have it attack the cancer. But in the case of Steve, they've tinkered with his immune system on a molecular level so that it is attacking his own body less. That is nothing short of miraculous that we're able to do that. There is a question, Steve, to get to your response. Might taking some of these drugs in some way be protective because they're limiting the immune response? The short answer, I'm sorry, Steve, is we don't know. It's too soon to tell these things, and you could imagine that a drug like that would cut both ways, because when you have your immune system dampened, it does open you up to virus and bacterial attack. How has your health been prior to this?
Well, we're running out of time.
Oh, all right. Thank you, Anne.
That's awkward.
I really appreciate it. Hey, stay safe, Ohio.
Yeah, stay safe. And Matt Richtel, best wishes on your book. And I look forward to talking to you again sometime.
Yep, likewise.
Matt Richtel, New York Times reporter, author of An Elegant Defense, The Extraordinary New Science of the Immune System, A Tale in Four Lives. Highly recommend. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Thank you.